Snow, Glyn. It snowed in April. What's that all about?
It did. I went out for a nice walk on Tuesday, and the weather looked quite nice. Actually, the sun was out, so I didn't have the right layers on. Let's just say for the temperature. So, I actually took a call, and I was stood around in the cold for a few minutes, and got absolutely freezing, and then it started snowing.
Yeah.
So, what's all that about then?
Well, as you saw, I went up to Wilton Windmill, if it's easy for you to say, it sort of, you know, it was hail and snow up there. But later on, when I was driving home up over Fairmile to Collingbourne Deuces, which is, I don't know if you know that road, it's a long straight road high up in the hills, and it was almost a whiteout. I could barely see where I was going. Unbelievable.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we explore the more hidden parts of Wiltshire and talk to you all about them. My name is Glyn Coy, and I do quite a few things. I take photographs, do podcasts, write blogs. I'm a part-time radio celebrity. Been on TV a couple of times. What about you?
None of that. So this is Paul Timlett, and I'm never, ever going to use the phrase paint with lights, now that you've taken the mickey out of me on the Facebook site for that. So I'm now going to call myself somebody who captures moments in time.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Do you know, I got that from there's a photography podcast that I listen to called the Fujicast, and if anybody's keen photographer, I urge you to subscribe to the Fujicast. And it was started by two wedding photographers, one of whom lives in Wiltshire, the other one lives in Newbury, so they're quite local. I might have mentioned these guys before, and one of them is also, in fact both of them, also very good street photographers, and they've had great debates about people being uncomfortable about having their photograph taken, which of course, you know, 90% of people are. Nobody likes having their photograph taken. And these guys, sort of what they do is they say to their subject, well, you know, you just think that you're son or daughter in 30 years time will be able to look back on that picture of you, and you know what we're doing is capturing a moment in history, a moment in time for people to look back on, and wouldn't it be selfish if you didn't, you know, give them that opportunity? So try that one next time the kids
it's a good way to or good expression to use, because I've noticed that there's another Facebook page that I follow. I think it's called Historic Wiltshire. And there's a guy there who keeps putting up photographs of locations around Wiltshire that he took in 1972 or 1970, and his kids around. And it's amazing because the locations look almost the same as they do today.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And it is. It's a moment in time.
And the only way you can tell the difference is that the photograph, you know, may have been black and white, but you know, I'd shoot mostly black and white still, but it's the cars that gives it away, and the clothes, obviously. But the cars, and you see an old Ford Anglia parked at the side of the road or something like
that. I always find it funny about cars, because I look at cars from my childhood that you see dotted around sometimes, and it's like an old rusted banger, and it looks terrible. And you think, at one point in time in my life, I looked at that car with envy and thought it looked like a dream machine.
Yeah.
Now it looks like an old rust bucket.
My first cars were rust buckets. I had a VW Beetle where you could see the floor, you could see the road under through the footwell.
That's old school air conditioning.
Yes, right. It had cruise control because the accelerator pedal used to stick on the floor and you'd have to lift it up with your finger. Anyway, enough of that nonsense.
Back to Wiltshire, Hidden Wiltshire.
Yeah, what you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Well, I've been doing quite a bit of walking, actually, because I've been off work this last week, so I've been out and about quite a bit. Obviously, I did the Follywood walk that David Alderslade pointed us towards, which we mentioned last time around. And I think we'll probably do that in a podcast next week, next week or next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because it was fantastic. It was just amazing. The stuff you could see and the history you found along the way was just out of this world, really. And then yesterday I went around the Fonthill Estate. I've never been around there before. That was fascinating as well. Nice 6 mile route.
Yeah, there's. Yeah, I saw your photographs of that. They were great. I mean, it does look beautiful, and it's not somewhere I've walked before. I've ridden through it on my way back from Tisbury. That's right, and the what's the old Wardour Castle and up that way. I used to like riding up through there, and then you come back down along that lake at Fonthill, and it is beautiful. I mentioned to you earlier on when we were swapping messages about the book that I read is a trilogy, and this guy, and it's set in the 18th century, I think. Well, it must be, because our friends Colt Hoare and Cunnington, the archaeologists and historians, they feature in this book, and the series is sort of, it's a mixture of novel and historical fact, and it's fascinating for anybody who's sort of, you know, interested in Wiltshire and the landscape. And you read the story of this guy, and the story is that this guy, his young man, comes down from London having inherited a brewery from his father, and he decides to take some time out before running the brewery, and he basically goes on an extended walk, which I think ended up being over several years in Wiltshire. So it's all about these different places he goes. So it's all the places that we talk about and we recognise, but he weaves in this historical figures. But obviously he is a fictional character. And actually, I'm just going to lean backwards and get. I found the books. And they're written by a guy. So he's a local guy, a Wiltshire guy, called it just says by a pedestrian, and it's in three parts. Actually, it's the beginning of the 19th century. So one of them's dated 1807, and then the other two 1808. And one's called A Tour in Search of Chalk, and then a tour in search of Flint, and A Tour in Search of Gold. And in one of those books, this character breaks into the Fonthill Estate, and there's a big tower there, and somebody bet him that he couldn't run up to the top and the bottom and get out again before he was found by the local gamekeeper. And anyway, look out for the books. It's a fantastic read. They're really entertaining.
I think there used to be a very large tower there. There was Fonthill Abbey, which was a folly.
Yes, that's the one. That's the one.
And it collapsed.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
It fell down because the building was not quite stable, and is now a bit of a ruin. You can't get to it, unfortunately, because it's on the sort of private land. But fascinating history around there.
Yeah.
And I posted up on Twitter last night that I'd been around there and posted some pictures up, and some historian commented that Fonthill Gifford was the place of really interesting sex scandal from the 1700s.
Oh, yes, that's
right. I scurried off to read up on it. I'll save that for another podcast, though. But fascinating history around there.
It's probably still going on, Glyn.
I tell you what, though, one thing I found funny is there's a lot on the walk. There were loads of lovely little villages to walk through. I mean, picture postcard, stunning. I'd imagine in the summer it's a fantastic walk. But I walked to a place called Berwick St. Leonard, which is a little village on the estate. And there was a church in there, beautiful little church, now run by the church's conservation trust, with lots of signs saying, welcome, come in, come in, come in. So I went in and had a look around. Then I walked along to the next village, which was Fonthill Bishop. And they had a similar church in architectural style, actually. But that one was still an active congregation. And that had signs saying, walkers, do not wipe your feet on the mat and get mud on it. And I was I think they missed the memo when it came to the theology of Christianity about welcoming all comers.
That's right. Yeah.
Walkers, stay out.
Yes, you're not welcome in this one.
Yeah.
But apart from admiring your photographs of that walk, which I'm going to do, it looks fabulous. Yeah, as you know, I also did the Follywood walk, which was just extraordinary. Yeah, we must do a podcast on that one. I'd met certainly one extraordinary character, and met a few more who historical characters during the journey. But yeah, that was a very interesting walk. I also went to I had to deliver a print. Photographic print that somebody bought from me, on my way back, this was Tuesday in the snow, and I thought I'd go and have a look at Wilton Windmill because I've seen some lovely photographs of that recently. So I went up to have a go, and I then drove over to the to Recce, another walk, which hopefully will become the subject of a blog. And it was an area that I've only been through probably once before, many, many years ago. And it's not very far away, the Chute Causeway and Hippenscombe. And I was sort of, I think the thing that inspired me was Andrew Rumsey.
Rumsey, yeah.
Yeah,
Andrew Rumsey. The Bishop.
Of Ramsbury. Of Ramsbury, yeah. It gets very confusing. And he posted some great photographs. In fact, I think he did one of his little videos. He's got a YouTube channel, which is well worth watching. Does sort of little 3-4 minute videos, and he sort of filmed himself walking along Hippenscombe, which is a fabulous place. It's another bottom. I mean, that whole area is, there's more bottoms than you can shake a stick at around there. And Hippenscombe is this sort of quite a broad valley, and it's most of it is sort of given over to shooting. There's a big shooting estate there. And of course, with no shooting being done, the pheasants and partridge just everywhere. It's crawling with them. Never seen so many. But it's a no-through road, so you can only drive so far. Then you have to stop. So, of course, no traffic. That was beautiful. And, there's so many footpaths and rights of way around there. I mean, it's going to be a challenge to string a walk together just because there's so many options. That was lovely area and something that's sort of long overdue a visit, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the place that we could spend a bit more time at. There's a lot of interesting things around there. There's a sarsen stone along the causeway which has some interesting carvings on.
Oh, really?
Which is worth a look. Yeah, and obviously the Chute Causeway is the location of that famous Revilius painting, the Causeway.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you managed to capture.
Purely by chance, absolute fluke.
It was when I saw it, I thought, "You found the view! You found the view!" Every time someone puts a picture of the Causeway painting on Twitter, every man and his dog goes, "Where's that? Where's that? I want to go and see it." And all these people debate about where it is, and hardly anyone knows. But you stumbled across it.
Yeah, I mean, it's on a road, which I guess in his painting you've got, it looks like a chalk track in the foreground, so I suppose that's what is now the road. And I was driving up it, and it's relatively steep, and I think again I think I've ridden up it many years ago, because it's quite a challenge riding up there. And I was about halfway up, and I just looked to my right, and because it's the view is of Hippenscombe, you're looking down into Hippenscombe. And I looked and thought, wow, look at that. And I literally jammed on the brakes in the car. And it was lucky there was nobody behind me. And I just abandoned the car in the middle of the road because it's a fairly quiet sort of lane, and sort of jumped out and just, you know, stood by the fence at the side of the road and took that shot, not knowing, of course, that it was an Eric Revilius scene. Painted it in 1937, to have changed a bit.
Yeah, apparently when he used to come to Wiltshire, he'd be driven around by a friend and he'd just stumble across scenes in his mind that he wanted to paint. So there are all these, there's a famous scene that he painted of the Westbury White Horse, which of course we know where that is. But there's another one where he paints the White Horse from a train, from inside a train carriage. And to me, it looks more like the Alton Barnes White Horse. But, he uses this artistic license, I suppose, about the landscape, and just exaggerates it and maybe transplants different scenes. But it makes interesting debates, because people often then debate about, well, where a particular scene was painted and what it represents. But it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think that's so. If anybody wants to look that up, in fact, I'll put a link in the show notes so people can go and see that. I've forgotten what it's called now. I did put it on the Facebook site. I think it's just called the, is it the Causeway?
The Causeway.
Wiltshire. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely beautiful part of the world. And I think the other thing that's been sort of occupying my mind the last couple of weeks, which we'll probably talk about when we come to do the Ranscombe Bottom Walk, is blocked footpaths.
So this week we're going to talk about an area which I love, actually, because it's a photographer's dream in parts. But it centres around a walking route that takes you through Ranscombe Bottom, which is just at the bottom end of Calstone Down and Cheryl Down and that area. And then we're going to go from there through across to Morgan's Hill and talk about various things along the way. But before we get started, I just wanted to say, I mean, I started this walk right off the A4. I sort of drove through Calne, came out the other side, past Quemerford, and just after the turning to Calstone, Wellington, there's a fairly massive lay-by on the side of the A4, which is could probably fit about 200 cars. It's huge. and it's always cracks me up because there's this kebab van that's there. Most days of the week called Aussie's Kebab, and it's always look for Aussie's Kebab signs to know that I'm in the right place.
We saw, because you know, Stu and I went and did the walk earlier this week, because I hadn't done that particular walk before. I walked through Ranscombe Bottom before, but and you know, Morgan's Hill and Furze Knoll and what have you, but I hadn't done your walk, so we went over and did that, and Ozzy's van was actually in the farmyard next door.
Yes, that's where he parks it when he's not working.
Right. Well, he was in there. He was in the back doing something to it. He was fiddling about in the van.
Yeah.
Because I said to Stu, we saw him at the end of the walk, and I thought, I could murder a kebab.
That's a great thing, because if you park there, you can treat yourself at the end of the walk. Because he's usually open sort of late afternoon, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and actually, it wouldn't be... it wouldn't be good to continue with this without mentioning being on the A4 about the Cheryl Gang, otherwise known as the Naked Highwaymen, who in the old days, in the 1800s, when the sort of gentry used to travel from London to Bath to bathe in the hot springs, they used to get picked off along the route by highwaymen. And in that area, there was this gang who would... use the tactic of attacking stagecoaches totally stark naked as a distraction and then to put the fear of God into people to hand over their
well,
money.
It would, wouldn't it?
And I read somewhere else, and not only did they strip themselves naked, they painted themselves white for some reason to disguise themselves. So, but when you're being attacked by a naked highwayman, I don't suppose you're focusing on the faces to memorise them. So,
They weren't on their way to Fonthill, were they?
Probably. But I think there's a painting. There's a pub along that route. I can't remember the name of the pub, but there is a pub just along that route that has a painting of the naked highwaymen in there. So if pubs are open and you fancy a bite to eat, nip in and have a look at the naked highwaymen.
I didn't know that story. It's I'm just waiting for the film.
It's a fantastic story. Oh dear. Anyway, very quickly, I came off after exiting the lay-by. There's a footpath just to the right that takes you towards Ranscombe Bottom, and takes you up through past the farm, through a sort of wooded area until you start to hit an area around Calstone Mill, where you then follow a path which follows the line of it's like a river. You're on a sort of elevated route, and you look down. You hear water and a river flowing because there's some springs up there, which gives rise to this flow of water, and it's a bit of a reservoir. Probably it was built to service the mill in the old days.
The river's actually, this is where the River Marden rises. So the Marden goes to, I think it joins the Bristol Avon over at near Chippenham somewhere. And there were quite a few route options above that. You said that the path is above the river. You can also drop down and cross the river and go along the other side. So there's quite a few options there. And there were, in fact, well, certainly around Calstone, there were at some point there were four mills, and then there were even more downstream. So yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what that's what the river did. It fed those mills. It drove the mills that were along there.
Yeah, I've taken a couple of routes. So the first time I did this walk, I stayed up top and followed the right of way at the top. And at the time, it was all weirdly fenced off and you know, the landowner was strictly enforcing the use of the right of way and stopping people spreading down onto the lower pass, because they put signs up about how there's some bird conservation thing going on up there or something.
Yes, there. Well, that's interesting you say that. I didn't know that, but as we sort of walked along there and we dropped down and we crossed over this what is little more than a stream there. Mm. I mean, it's a real gusher as well. I mean, you could hear like waterfalls and things. Yeah. And there are evidence of one or two of the mills which have, because there's only one mill left along that stretch where there's four. There's only one mill remains. And there's sort of masonry and sluices and all sorts along there. But when we dropped down to the lower path, I saw a sign about it's a wild bird release site.
Yeah.
Because if you go along to the springs that you mentioned, you're just right at the edge of the springs. There's sort of, you're into open access land, but the springs themselves are fenced off. So you can walk down to the fence and the springs are literally the other side of the fence. And there's a gate there which says private. And there were what looked like pheasant pens down there as well.
Yeah.
But the bird song in there was just tremendous, because there's no sound of traffic or anything. And I think there was a couple of ladies walking a dog came past. But other than that, we didn't see anybody. And it was so peaceful, but just this incredible bird song. There was a great flock of field fare up in the trees and a whole bunch of other birds that I couldn't identify from the song, and I couldn't really see them because they were hidden in the trees. But it's I think it's a bit of a twitcher's paradise.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why at the top end they were, you know, pretty much making sure people were staying on the right of way and not straying, so you wouldn't disturb the birds.
Yeah.
But then when I came out of that area and just started to hit the edge of Ranscombe Bottom, the farmers were up on the field to my right, because the sheep were basically giving birth to lambs.
Yeah.
Literally right in front of my eyes, I was seeing them come out, and the farmers were there, you know, catching the lambs as they came out and dealing with them and everything. And occasionally a lamb would come out and then run off, and they'd be chasing this lamb. It was the most amazing sight.
Yeah. I was a bit confused as the right of way, because when we came out of the where the springs were that we were talking about just now, and we sort of headed due east towards Ranscombe Bottom, and there was a gate which was sort of to our left, and then this fence line that went all the way up the sort of the bottom, you know, Ranscombe Bottom. And we were a bit confused as to which side of the fence line we should have been on. And to the left, there is a National Trust sign, and it says Ranscombe. I'm sure it says Ranscombe Bottom, but Ranscombe something, which suggested you were supposed to be on the left. But then it was sort of blocked off by pens. I mean, there were gates. I mean, you could get through the gates, but there didn't seem to be any obvious way through. So initially, we stayed to the right-hand side of this fence, and we started to walk up the valley. And then there was an electric fence all the way across it and up the side of the hill to the right. I probably left over from when they were doing the lambing. So we walked back down through the gate onto the other side of the fence, and it was all good because we ended up in the same place anyway. The fence just kind of runs out, and you end up Ranscombe Bottom, which is all open access land, and you can sort of roam at will around there.
Yeah, I think the path does go to the left of the fence.
Mm.
But yeah, I know you're at the junction of quite confusing gates and
the
rest of it. But yeah, like you say, pretty much all of the land around there is open access and National Trust owned.
Yeah.
So I think, there's a number of different routes you could take. And I did see sort of people wandering off up the hill while I was walking through the bottom itself. But the bottom is an interesting one because it's at the low end of the sort of downland, tucked away. So when you're up on by Cheryl Monument, you can't really see it.
No.
I only found it when I stuck my drone up once and looked down. I thought, blimey, there's a great big valley down there that's carved out. And it's a really distinct U-shaped valley with quite steep sides in parts. And I know that when I've been there, I've always found when you get deep into it, the first time I went there was no wind or anything. And literally, I couldn't hear a pin drop. It was quiet as anything.
Yeah.
Because you've got these steep sides of the valley that stop any noise pollution coming in.
Yeah.
The only thing I could hear was the odd cow.
So the last time I went there was, I looked it up, it was 2017, because I took a photograph up near Cheryl Monument looking down into Ranscombe Bottom. And it was a photograph that I was quite pleased with because I ended up putting it in an exhibition. And looking down into Ranscombe Bottom and sort of walked, having taken the photograph, walked down to the bottom and then headed east along the valley there. And it was a lovely warm day, and I can remember sort of just stopping on the slopes and just taking in the surroundings and listening to the skylarks, and I actually nodded off. I was sort of dozed off there because there was literally nobody around. Everybody was up at the monument.
Yeah, no, that's it. Not many people make it into the Ranscombe Bottom area. I know when I was there last week, I sat at the far end of the bottom and sort of halfway up the hill, and I just sat there for about half an hour, really.
Mm.
Then in the end, I had to move because I was absolutely freezing.
Yeah.
It was just a lovely place. And the views from when you sort of go slightly up the hill and you can look across and see Morgan's Hill on your left, you can see the Cheryl Monument on your right. It's just perfect.
Yeah. Tell you what we did see when we were down in the bottom still was towards that eastern end before you start to climb out of it, we sort of came around a slight bend because, I mean, that's what's interesting. It sort of wiggles around, doesn't it? And there's like a sort of a spur, and you can go either side of the spur. And we sort of came around a slight bend, and there were no more than 100 metres in front of us. There were six roe deer just sort of grazing on the edge of the slopes. And one of them, the stag, was sort of on top of the sort of a slight rise, and it was on the skyline. So you could have been in a Scottish glen apart from the fact that the deer was a bit smaller, but but there he was sort of stood there surveying his little harem and his antlers. It was just stunning.
Okay, so then when you get out of Ranscombe Bottom, you sort of go across a field and you hit what's called on the map the Wessex Ridgeway, which is coming down off sort of Cheryl Down, and eventually if you then chuck a right and head down, you'll hit a junction of a footpath with what is actually a fairly major Roman road. This is the old Roman road that I think would have run from London to Bath in the old days. It's the one that goes and skirts past Silbury Hill.
I was looking at this yesterday, and I'm not sure it went as far as London, or maybe it connected with another road that went to London, because it was it ran from, you're right, from Bath, and headed to, well, what I read, so it went to a garrison at a place called Speen, S-P-E-E-N, which is near Newbury. It's just outside Newbury. But as I say, it may well have connected with another Roman road to London. But on its way from Bath to sort of where we walked the other day on this walk, it goes through what was a Roman town called Velluccio, which is near Sandy Lane. I'm talking about Bowood. Yes. Sandy Lane's just up the road from from Bowood. And then sort of over at Speen, there was a garrison, and there was, I found a map, and there was a sort of Roman watchtower there, and it sort of maps out the you know, what would have been the Roman buildings on the route. But it was a pretty major route. You know, it predates Wansdyke that we were talking about in the last podcast, because it, you know, the Wansdyke cuts across the Roman road.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of this Roman road is now become the A4.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating section of the road, which obviously the A4 diverts at this point, and you're on a section which is, you know, probably looks like it did back in the day, but it's more of a track now. You do get four-wheel drive cars driving along there. I've seen Rovers flying down.
Yeah, it is a byway.
And this section of the walk, actually, you can tell it's a Roman road because it's quite long, straight, and quite dull.
You said that. I read your walk, and you said you described it as a trudge. Because Stu and I were talking about this, so I don't think it's a trudge at all, because the views are just incredible. And I wasn't really paying attention to the route, you know, to the road itself. I was just looking at the views around, and you know, some great views across to the north to Cheryl. And
yeah, I may be doing the route a disservice, because you're right. I know that at one point, as I was walking along, I turned around and looked behind me, and you got a fantastic view of the Cheryl Downs. And actually, I took a photo of that in the summer and put it on Twitter. And there's a landscape artist called Anna Dillon who immediately pinged me and said, I've done a painting of that, and I'm just about to finish it. And she showed me it, and it was an absolutely beautiful painting of the landscape. I think she called the painting Ranscombe Bottom as well, so I need to go and have a look at that.
Oh, yeah, we should look that one up. And again, that's something else to put a link to.
Yeah, yeah.
If I could find a pen. you can tell me later.
I can tell you later. Yeah, but that's Anna Dillon. And again, she's a bit like David Alderslade. She's got a very distinctive artistic style.
Yeah.
Very, very colourful. And she's done quite a few Wiltshire landscape paintings in the past. So she's explored quite a lot of the Wiltshire landscape and does a really interesting interpretation of it. So,
yeah. Oh, she'll look her up.
But the other thing that struck me along this Roman road, and I discovered this a few years ago when I was walking around here with some friends, and I stuck my drone up in the air. But just to the left as you walk along is a place called Baltic Farm. And there's a permissive path into the field there, but it's like a Bronze Age cemetery, really. It's full of bowl barrows.
Yeah.
And obviously was an important site in the Bronze Age.
Yeah, you can see, I mean, from the path where you go into that field, and there's a little sign there, isn't there, telling you what's in there.
Yes.
So we went in and sort of looked, you know, back the way in the direction we'd walked, and there are, I think it was four or five quite sizable bowl barrows in that field.
Yes.
But when I was reading up about it, it's part of a group of 18 barrows. And there are a load more over at Baltic Farm itself, because Baltic Farm is by the A361 from Devizes up to, that joins the A4. So Baltic Farm, you know, the access to Baltic Farm is off that road, and there are several more quite sizable barrows almost in the farmyard. You can't go in there, it's all private, but you can see them very clearly. But this is a huge site. As you say, you know, Bronze Age Cemetery.
Yeah, I know that on the Hidden Wiltshire website, where we've got the blog post about this walk, I've put a photo up there that I took with my drone a few years ago. It's a black and white one of four of those tumuli in a row, so you can get a sense of the scale. But yeah, there are so many more dotted around that landscape.
Yeah.
Beyond, it's really interesting. So this, it's funny, isn't it? Because the history in here again spans thousands of years. Because you've got Bronze Age, Roman, you've got Victorian with the monument on the hill. You've got an Iron Age hill fort on Cheryl Down. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it was a busy little place, Wiltshire, wasn't it?
Certainly was. And let's not forget as well that through this landscape, you probably had the armies of the Civil War traipsing across the Roundway back in the day as well. So,
yeah. Which, of course, you can also see very clearly from around here. Yes. And you can see Oliver's Castle. And
yes.
I think that's why I didn't find that Roman road particularly boring. It was just because it slowly climbs as well, doesn't it?
So
Not just on the level, you're gradually climbing, and so as you climb, you know more things open up, and you know the views become, you know, something else comes into view. So I found it fascinating.
I know last year when I did the walk, and it does get elevated, and then I went even further because I went to the top of Morgan's Hill. And I just sat there for ages watching the farmers in the fields below because they're doing the harvest.
Yeah.
And it was just perfect. It was just a lovely day.
Yeah, we did the same thing. We went up to Morgan's Hill and Furze Knoll. It's worth talking about Furze Knoll in a minute.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Morgan's Hill short?
Yeah, I mean, briefly? Morgan's Hill is a favourite of mine. It was one of the first places I went to 3 or 4 years ago when I was starting Hidden Wiltshire. It's a Wiltshire Wildlife Trust owned reserve now. I think they put livestock on there at certain times of the year, but it's a haven for wildflowers and insects, and it's a great place to go and watch sunsets in the summer as well. I've gone up there a few times. And you see quite a few families going up there in the summer evenings. It's just a lovely place. And it's interesting as well. I mean, you can see it. It's a bit of a landmark because you can see at the top there are two great big radio masts, which I think have a history of their own. I don't know if you've looked into this.
Yeah, I have. In fact, just going back to Wiltshire Wildlife Trust, if you look out for the information boards, do you know who designed those?
That's got to be our music man, hasn't it?
It is. It's Steve Dixon. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So
brilliant.
Steve's got his name on the bottom of the information boards. So he's.
Oh, I'll have to look that up next
time. Yeah. He's got a contract, I suppose you'd say, for Wiltshire Wildlife Trust, and he's got to redesign every information board for every reserve throughout Wiltshire.
So as far as I can make out as well, I mean, Morgan's Hill is named after a poor chap that was executed on the hill. It used to be a place of public executions. There was a gibbet up there. And apparently this gentleman, I think he was called John Morgan, was executed for murdering someone. So I don't know why it's taken his name, because I'm sure there were many other people who were hung up there. But that's the background.
Yeah, he was hung in 1720 for murdering his uncle, apparently.
Never a good idea.
No.
Never a good idea. But yeah, the radio masts, what can you tell us about those?
Yeah, well, again, it was actually Steve that put me onto this, because the piece of music that was the introduction to this part of the podcast, Steve actually sort of composed and recorded that earlier this week, and it was sort of inspired by Morgan's Hill and Furze Knoll, because Steve lives quite nearby, so this is a sort of favourite haunt of his. Actually, that's a bad word to use, isn't it? Haunt in connection with. he mentioned it to me because when he sort of sent me the recording, and I said, "What's the, you know, tell me the story of the sort of the soundtrack, you know, to the background to the music?" He said, "Well, it was Morgan's Hill was built as a it grew, it's a hill, for God's sake, but it was Marconi, the company, not the man, put up it was part of a network of wireless network, it's called the Imperial Wireless Chain, and during World War One they used to it was part of the network that would listen out for zeppelins. Now I'm not sure if it was zeppelins over Wiltshire specifically, or they would just string all the sort of the network together and fix a position on where these things were. But the Royal Engineers in the war, they sort of requisitioned or took over the Imperial Wireless Chain and sort of requisitioned it for use for sort of monitoring, you know, enemy movements. And they made particular use of people who couldn't see, you know, blind people, because their hearing was so acute And I guess that, you know, the sound quality wasn't so great in those days. And, you know, they could, in particular could, you know, detect the sounds that they were looking for. And if you look, if you go up there now, there is just to the, at the bottom of Furze Knoll, there is a sort of like a concrete shed, it looks like. And apparently that was part of it. That was part of the original listening station. And then there are some sort of, I think you mentioned in your blog, there's some sort of concrete posts, and I think there's a bits of chain that are up there still, which are left over from this listening station.
It's fascinating.
But then, yeah, go on.
I was going to say, after that, I mean, if you wanted to take a detour at this point, you could also, I mean, you've got the fantastic Wansdyke path cutting through the edge of the hill, but just beyond that, it's that mysterious copse of trees and firs called Furze Knoll, which is a bit of a landmark in the area. But it's very, I've had it a very creepy place.
Yeah.
I've been in there when the sun's coming down and it's getting dark in there, and there's a sort of eerie feeling to it.
Yeah, I tell you what, you wouldn't catch me out there in the dark. There's, I walk a lot in the dark when I'm out sort of photographing, and quite often, you know, I'll be on Salisbury Plain and, you know, packing up my gear and realise that it's dark, you know. So sort of tramping across Salisbury Plain in the dark, it doesn't bother me, but I'm not sure I'd want to be up there. There's something very, very eerie about it. And I tell you what struck us, we actually had our lunch up there the other day, sat on a log, and I was sitting there and I thought, do you know what? I can't hear any birds. There's no bird song at all. It's completely silent.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mysterious place as well, because it's so close to so many things of history, like the Wansdyke, and there's a barrow a few hundred yards away. And you would think that, given its distinctiveness in the landscape, that it must have some significance. But I can't find anything in the written record about it. There may be something inside. It's ancient, but
I mean, you know, it's quite a gruesome event. Just in the last few days up there, somebody found a load of they found the heads of different animals hanging from trees. So apparently there was a buzzard and fox, and they found that the head of a badger sort of rammed into a badger hole, and the police got involved, and apparently they're investigating it for sort of ritualistic practices. So,
that sounds very dark.
There were some odd people attracted to that place, that's for sure.
Okay, so let's run away from this.
Let's
very
run away,
back,
yeah.
Back to the safety of the Wansdyke.
Yes.
And, of course, we talked about the Wansdyke, I think it was last time around, when we were talking about Tanhill, because it does snake its way pretty much from here, from Morgan's Hill, all the way over to Marlborough, as a continuous stretch. And I was looking at it, there's actually, again, I said this before, but I looked into it again today. I was reading an article written by a professor of archaeology who was saying that there's just a dearth of research. There's no real substantive research been done on the Wansdyke. You can count on one hand the number of books that have been written in the last couple of hundred years. I mean, it's just crying out, I think, for some more investigation, and it's very neglected in terms of research.
Yeah, and as we said in the last podcast, I mean, there's those three theories about what it actually was, and, you know, nobody knows for sure what it was built for.
No. Anyway, but when I finished traipsing around Morgan's Hill and taking in the views and taking 3,000 photographs, I then went to the far west corner and picked up a footpath there that took me down towards Horsecombe Bottom. Another bottom, which is very picturesque. But this is where I was trying to get towards the old rectory and the church that's marked on the map at Calstone Wellington. And I got very confused with the rights of way around there, because the footpath seemed, and this is not the first footpath in this area that I've come across this, and the rights of way that go across the fields seem to have been blocked, let's just say, or disguised. And it's very difficult to find your way across them.
We took a bridle way, so we had the golf course on our left, and we came out of a gate actually right by one of Steve's information boards, And we then sort of headed northeast down a bridle way. And off to our left was this extraordinary building, which I messaged you about when I was up there and said, do you know what this place is? And sent you a picture. And it turned out to be Wellington Barn, which is apparently a wedding venue.
Yes.
I mean, it's a stunning location. Just sits on its own at the bottom of the hill there, with a long, long drive up to it. It looked beautiful. So we had that on our left, and we did get tipped out by that church. But I was following my sort of OS Maps app, and it was telling me to go across this field, but the signs were all sort of diverting you around the edge of the field, which was fine. It wasn't a long diversion. It was just keeping to the edge rather than walking across. And I completely get that, and it wasn't a problem. We probably added about 25 meters to the walk. It was nothing, but it brought us right out at the church.
Yeah, but I when I was there the other day, I tried a different route coming down, not quite as far along as that bridle way, but I took another path down, and it took me diagonally across the field, and I followed the track, the right of way as it says it should be on the map, and of course where it hit the boundary of the field was a bloody big post and rail fence across the right of way, so I had to report that one.
As we'll talk about in a minute, there was there's a couple more that were blocked. But the church, I mean, did you go into the church? I saw you took a photograph of it.
No, I didn't. It was closed at the time.
Yeah, well, it was closed in the week, but you could go into the porch. The thing that struck me was the graffiti. It was fantastic. I mean, not modern day graffiti. This was being carved into the stone in the porch. And the earliest date that I could see in there was 1647. And there were loads from 1688 was obviously a fairly significant year. I'm not sure why. So there was lots of etchings in there. It said 1688 and the initials WH.
I wonder if the folks at Wiltshire Medieval Graffiti who research these kind of things have been there. I'll have to look it up on their website.
Is there such a thing? I didn't know.
Yeah, Wiltshire Medieval Graffiti. There is.
Right.
Do a Google search on it. You'll find their website.
But it was incredible. I mean, you can sort of, I don't know, it's like that connection with people from 400 or 500 years ago. Sort of reaching back, and you can almost imagine these people, maybe a young lad scratching his name there. And these days we call it graffiti and vandalism, but then it's like sort of, now looking back at what they did, it's history. It's a bit like my point about taking somebody's photograph, in 50 years' time, it's history.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, as we sort of stepped out of the porch, and so I'm facing the front door, and off to the left, there's like a stone panel. And it was a memorial stone to a chap called Richard Rogers, who died in 1769. And his son, who's sort of named next to him, whose first name was, I don't know if this was a cocking a snoop to the locals, but his son was called Richman, as in Richman, but Richman Rogers. And so they got this sort of stone panel, and above it, it's like a sort of another panel, and I can only describe it as being a carving of it, like a chalice, like a sort of golden chalice, but with like a headdress or a veil over it, which was just bizarre. I mean, initially I thought it was it looked like long hair, but actually it was a headdress, and I've no idea what that is. I'd love to know. I would love somebody sort of to contact us. I know what that is. Because, of course, what I initially thought was, it's a book I'm reading at the moment by Roger Deakin called Notes from Walnut Tree Farm, which, again, fabulous book. And in there, he describes how he was lying in under a church pew. He was just on his own in this church, lying underneath the pew, and the vicar came in and caught him and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm looking for the green man." And apparently, in a lot of medieval villages, you have, it was quite traditional to paint or carve the green man, which is a sort of representation of nature, And so I thought, well, is this the Green Man? But it can't have been. I mean, this is a chalice with a wig on, you know.
Fascinating. Oh, it's funny all these things you stumble across as you're wandering through places in the middle of nowhere.
But before we move on, my phone's flashing up saying Prince Philip has died. So age 99. There you go.
That's a moment in time.
Yes. So people will look back in listening to our podcast in 50 years' time, thinking they recorded that.
That was the moment we captured it.
Yes.
That's going to reverberate through the news and the nation today, I would think.
So from there, from the church, I don't know which way you went.
Yeah, so I headed back towards over towards Manor Farm in Calstone, Wellington.
Yeah.
And then I followed a bridle way to the right, which took me down to Calstone Mill. Yeah. Now, the bridle way is supposed to take me right past the front of Calstone Mill.
It is.
But
yes.
We're now going to have another chat about one of these interesting rights of way issues.
Well, even before there, we came to. It's like a. Can I describe it as being like a memorial garden? I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And on the map, there's a footpath marked. So if you're standing...
I remember looking at that footpath and thinking...
Where is it?
I wouldn't mind doing that, but there were some people outside the houses, and I didn't feel like I could just... Because it looked like it went in between two houses.
If anybody goes down there... So I was sort of standing at the bench in that little memorial garden, which is a beautiful spot, really is. And behind me are two or three cottages. And if you look at the map, the footpath goes literally between the cottages. Again, I have my OS Map app open, and you can zoom right in, be very, very precise about where you are. And the footpath goes between the cottages, presumably up their garden and across the field. And there was absolutely no sign of it. There was, literally no sign. Yeah. There was no footpath sign. Yeah. But you could see where people had come from that little track behind the memorial garden. And they'd walked across the grass to the front of the cottages, and they'd worn a track. That's like the natural line that people walk. Because, that's what happens. People don't take the way they should go. They go the easiest way. So they'd worn a little path, and it comes out to the track in front of the cottages, and absolutely no sign of the path at all. So we had to walk down the road to Manor Farm, where you then follow the bridleway that you mentioned. And partway down, just before Calston Mill, this is where the footpath should have joined. It should have come in from over my right shoulder, as it were. And it had been fenced off at that end as well. So that footpath has been completely obliterated. And it's on the definitive maps, on the Wiltshire Council definitive map. It's still there marked as a footpath. But as you say, the bridle way then goes on in a straight line down the hill right past Calston Mill. And on the fence post, there was a bit of paper stuffed in a sort of plastic sleeve with a permissive path drawn on it, which sent you sort of off to your left and round and over a bridge, and then brings you out above the mill. And it's a perfectly good path. There's nothing wrong with it. But the definitive path, the definitive right of way, is still marked on the map. It is a public right of way, and you'd be quite within your rights to walk right past the mill. And it's a stunning looking building. I mean, it's 18th century mill, I think. And it's the only one of those four through Calstone that exists. And I think it was used for all sorts of things over the years, but latterly, before it sort of closed in 1913, it was a flour and malting mill. There are two arguments. One is that it goes right past their front door. So you would have people potentially riding horses and riding bikes right past your front door there across your drive and all the rest of it. But it's such a shame that you can't get a really good look of what is a beautiful building. So I'm kind of torn on that one. I think you said that they're trying to get the bridle way closed.
Yeah.
But
I've looked into it. So I remember when I found this last year, I spent a lot of time reading up on all the correspondence and parish council minutes and things like that. And apparently he's been trying to get this move for years. And the first time he tried to do it, it got rejected. So he's going through another round. And I think he's actually kind of won the argument this time. I think Wiltshire Council have issued an order to move the right of way.
Right.
But obviously there's a process now that, because the order was issued 2 years ago and it still hasn't been executed. So there's a process to go through. But from what I can read into it, the horse riders were quite happy for the bridle way to be diverted, because the route that takes you through the land in front of, or through the front of the house and over the garden, it involves a really narrow bridge, which was very difficult to navigate horse. So the horse riders think that the compromise is great because it means it's easier for them to ride through. But of course, the right of way purists are still objecting, because it's the same way you're closing down an ancient right to walk in front of this beautiful building.
And I think, you know, the people that live there, they bought the mill knowing that there was a right of way that subsisted across the land. And, you know, just like I have, you know, as we keep saying, I've got a public footpath across my garden, but we bought the house knowing it was there and there's not a damn thing we can do about it. And it, but it's not right past my back door. It's, you know, 50 feet away or whatever. And we put a fence up so that, you know, give us a bit of privacy. But it's a bit more difficult there because it literally goes right in front of their door. But it's, I don't know, it's, I look at historic buildings like that and think that they, you know, they're kind of a national asset. And, you know, they're maintaining it beautifully. I mean, it's in fantastic condition. But, you know, shouldn't the public, you know, be able to enjoy that as well? That'll open up a whole can of worms in a debate, I've no doubt.
That will rumble on for a while longer, I think. Okay, so actually, I mean, from here, you're pretty much retracing your steps back to where the walk was started, just following some of the, you know, the rights of way. And there's various different ways you can get back to that parking place, but that's pretty much the walk.
Yeah.
So we could wrap up.
Yeah, I think just mileage wise, I think you had 666, didn't you? You got 6.66, which is strangely appropriate for this particular walk,
especially with Furze Knoll in the mix.
I was just using the app on my phone and it came up with 9, but I do tend to wander off and go poke around and look at things, so maybe that. But I didn't think I'd wandered off that far, so
yeah. I don't think it was 9, but who knows?
I think if you'd
wandered off and done things like Furze Knoll and gone left, right, and done a bit of exploring along the way, maybe you could have added a few more steps. That's for sure.
Yeah, but not
3 miles.
Not 3 miles, no.
Okay.
So there you go.
If we wrap up this week, I mean, next week, I think what we'll do, or in 2 weeks' time, when we get back together, we'll go through that Folly Wood route, because that's still fresh in our minds, and
it's such an interesting walk as well. And more blocked paths to talk about.
plenty. It's becoming a common theme for us trying to explore. Actually, one thing I'd say about Font Hill, the estate I walked on yesterday, is they do a fantastic job at maintaining the rights of way.
Yeah.
All the gates are in good condition. The signpost is clear. Where you get tributary paths going off onto private land, they're clearly marked, you know, no right of way. It's obviously they accept that there are rights of way across the estate, but, you know, they encourage you to stay on those. But I just thought it was very nicely done. It's a good way of, you know, being an example to other landowners on how to manage these things.
I feel pretty strongly about these things, and I'd love to see a sort of Scottish right to roam system. And, you know, this, as I've said before, I think, you know, we in England, we've only got access, or we're 93% of the country in England is private and not accessible. And that includes your back garden and, you know, stuff like that. and 97% of waterways are private.
Yeah.
So when we're all being, especially now when, you know, we're trying to maintain distance from people and you're channeled down these little corridors, sometimes for no real apparent reason. I mean, that's why I think I get I develop strong feelings about it. probably should stop there.
That's the polite way of putting it.
Yeah. Just before we go, should we just do the normal acknowledgements and thank yous and what have you? So again, the lower or Lowa boots, walking shoes offer is still there. Lowa spelt Lowa, and if you want 20% off their walking boots and shoes, then go to the website, and when you check out, put in the discount code HW for Hidden Wiltshire 20, HW20 for your 20% off. Thanks again to Steve Dixon, who's even more relevant to the podcast today than he normally is because he's information boards. So look out for those, any Wiltshire Wildlife Trust information boards. Steve's working his way around Wiltshire, updating all of those. So thank you for the music and the sounds, Steve. And go to the website for show notes and the various links.
Very well done. So I think we're done for this week's podcast.
We are.
Catch you in 2 weeks. Bye for now.
Bye for now.